to pee or poop outside of the litter box, and to exhibit aggressive behaviors than a matched control group of cats with claws. The fact is, declawing is something that is done simply for human convenience. To essentially mutilate a living being to protect a couch, that is just crazy to me. Some compromise is needed for living with an animal, yet many cats are declawed before even being given a chance to scratch an appropriate scratching post in the first place. No cat would ever elect to be declawed. Cats need and use their claws for so many things: stretching, exercising, marking their territory, playing, protection, and hunting. All those things that boost mojo. If the deed has been done, perhaps some of you have declawed your cats in the past. I get it. It's unfortunately easy and in some places even encouraged. I can forgive those who work to educate themselves and never do this to another kitty they live with. This is your chance to join the fight to make declawing a procedure of the past. Let your friends, family, and neighbors know what declawing really is. And let your vet know how you feel about it, too. 14. When your cats don't get along. When it comes to violence between cats, I think one of the most detrimental mistakes that guardians make is the let them work it out approach, giving the warring parties access to one another, even when you're not home. Talk about letting inmates run the asylum. Let's stop fooling ourselves. If the cats were going to work out their differences, they would have done it by now. Instead, we are facing a relationship that, with every passing day, is becoming less and less fixable. We have to take control of the situation, deal with the needs of both cats, and make the world safe and territorially ownable for both. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 2. The Relationship Mender. The problem. If you have opened this book and flipped directly to this chapter, my guess is that you're finding some degree of pee, poop, fur, and possibly even blood in unexpected places around your house, and that you are separating your cats for fear they're going to kill one another in your absence. The reality. Anybody who has been in the position of dealing with cats who don't get along knows the incredible amount of stress it causes, both for human and animal family members. In my experience, the increasingly erratic and destructive behavior becomes a downward spiral for all of the animals in the home. The animal chaos raises your anxiety and blood pressure, and that downward spiral becomes a Category 5 tornado, taking out everything in its path. If I'm capturing the scenario in your home to a T, that's because I've lived it, and I get it. The following recipe has brought resolution to the majority of cases I've dealt with through the years. There are certain variables involved in the most common scenarios, and we'll address those in a moment. But for now, this should get things with our feline family feuders back on track. The steps. 1. Site swapping. See Chapter 10. When Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu said, "The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step," he probably wasn't thinking about resolving hardcore cat problems, but it definitely applies here. The first step is for you, the human, to reclaim ownership by taking a definitive stance in the name of control. In other words, it's time to separate. These cats should not have access to one another until we get to the end of this recipe. For now, they don't even make eye contact. There will only be swapping, co-ownership of space at separate, safe times. 2. The other side of the door feeding ritual. See Chapter 10. This idea is centered on setting challenge lines on opposite sides of a door. The only time the combatants smell each other, they smell dinner. The only time they smell food, they smell their enemy. Peace is being forged through positive associations and at a determined pace, dictated by you and your cat's ability to cross challenge lines peaceably. 3. Eat, play, love. See Chapter 10. Once we have the cats at the end of the opposite side of the door introduction rainbow, it's time to introduce eat, play, love. The idea is simple but crucial. We are now giving the warring parties enough rope to be in the same room at the same time, not separated by a gate, door, or barricade of any kind. We are depending on our ability to entertain and compel them both in separate activities. Eat, play, love gives you many valuable tools in terms of predicting and avoiding troublesome scenarios. It's always best to do with someone helping, since it's easier to manage both cats this way. While doing steps 1, 2, and 3, work on the following. A. Separated HCKE, hunt, catch, kill, eat sessions. We want each cat to fully embrace his raw cat mojo without distraction. Remember, the E in HCKE stands for eat. That means we do these sessions around mealtime, so we can segue into our mealtime door sessions. Also, don't forget, different cats have different play needs. While you practice boil and simmer, your cat might be so energetically charged after dinner that the final round of play needs to happen then. Knowing this will pave the way for a peaceful reintroduction, since you can ensure a relatively drained energetic balloon when they finally see one another. B. Catification. Increase the peace by increasing the space. Make sure there are escape routes and secure passageways. Be sure to take away death traps by blocking off the unders and getting rid of ambush zones. Be aware that clutter can make one cat an easy target for the other. Once we reintegrate, we want there to be plenty of space for both cats to coexist comfortably. The mojo moment. Our mojo moment, when it comes to reintroduction, is technically a place where journey meets destination. Eat, play, love sessions, at first maybe lasting a few minutes before ending on a high note and packing it all in till tomorrow, get longer and longer. Then the night will come. The cats will eat their dinner in a shared territory, watch the other move about the space with no incidents, or even the threat of one. And you decide that maybe it's time for you to eat dinner as well. And suddenly, it's not an exercise. It's life. Congratulations. You have arrived at the moment of group mojo. Notes from the chef. Recipe timeline. For each of these steps, the timeline can vary widely. Part of your job is to keep an eye on the challenge lines for the individual cats and the community at large. Each step can take days or weeks, depending on the willingness of the participants and how entrenched the problem has become. The key is not to move on to the next step until you have predictable results at the current step. Dealing with setbacks. Whether it's as minor as a hissing war across the door at dinner or as major as a fight breaking out during Eat, Play, Love, all you need to do is reverse engineer the process back to the last successful challenge line. In other words, simply back it up to the last mile marker instead of backtracking to the first step of the 1,000-mile journey. The key to all of this? Get back on the horse. Do not let the paralytic trauma of a single event define the future of your home. Take a minute if you must to lick your wounds, emotional or physical, and get back to it. Positive associations. Both cats have to be shown over and over again that the other cat is not a threat, either physically or territorially. As long as we keep the good vibes flowing throughout the session, and those vibes continue to the next session, vibes become communal mojo, and we are golden. Always end sessions on a high note. If we're trying to rewire the feuding cats with good vibes toward one another, then the last thing we want is for a last impression from being together to be a bad one. Even if nothing particularly earth-shattering has happened during the session, that is a high note. It's a tough call sometimes, but trust your gut. Although daily challenge is the name of the game, so is daily peace. Avoid fighting. As described in Chapter 10, one of the key challenges and most critical objectives of the Eat, Play, Love session is to avoid fighting. One of the best ways to initially circumvent this is through distraction, and we can do this by interrupting eye contact with yes slash no. In other words, stop the stare downs, which will prevent the throw downs and the beat downs. Momentary eye contact between cats gives them information, but the moment movement ceases and staring takes over, danger is not far behind. If you can predict it, you can redirect it. All you need to perfect is being able to get Napoleon to turn her head. From there, she knows something with higher value awaits, and we get to show our victim that the bully can be in his presence without an ass-kicking being the inevitable end. When to use the relationship mender. Here are four of the most common and fixable scenarios I encounter when it comes to cats not getting along. See which one hits closest to home for you, then check out the additional notes. 1. Bullies and victims, when one cat is picking on another. The problem: you have a bully in your house and she's constantly picking on at least one other cat. The reality: whether the motivation is play or territorial, a cat who runs is a cat who will be chased. Not to blame the victim, of course, but it's not particularly productive to hang the black hat on the aggressor either. We often focus on changing the behavior of the Napoleon, the bully, which is, of course, essential to show him that there is no reason to overown. But the reality in the world of the raw cat is, if you act like prey, you will be treated like prey. And while there are things we can do to affect change in the Napoleon, one thing is for sure in their world as well as ours. Bullies think twice about attacking once they sense confidence in their victims. Key points. 1. HCKE is a vital part of the solution in bully/victim cases. In separate sessions, we use HCKE to drain the aggressor's, bully's, energy, and, through repetition, to raise the victim cat's self-esteem. Over time, the victim becomes more confident, and when the bully sees her full of mojo, he'll stop treating that victim like prey. 2. Crucial catification. We're now familiar with how hunters use cat chess, see Chapter 10, to predict the moves of their prey. So let's raise the victim's self-esteem and remove the need for the Napoleon to overown by creating infinitely more territory. We can best do this by being aware of how the victim sees the world. Timid cats need to find their mojo, and for some cats, the confident wear is being up high. Shelving, for example, allows them to be elevated while the other cat plays on the floor. This vantage point, which works just as well as we saw in Chapter 8, allows detached observation where the victim can see their one-time tormentor in a completely different light. As just an individual, eating, playing, simply being, without the component of an attack at any moment. 3. Preventative measures. Although we are expecting our recipe to do the trick, here are a couple more just-in-case ideas you can try. Put a bell on the aggressor's collar. This will serve as an early warning system to prevent sneak attacks. Wallflower scissor hands. I'm not adverse to the concept of keeping the nails of a wallflower or victim long. We work very hard to get wallflowers to stand up for themselves. Why not slip a pair of brass knuckles onto their paws? Your Napoleon's going to be a little more hesitant the next time around. What's in a name? Napoleon versus bully versus corrections officer versus alpha cat. In Chapter 5, I discussed the corrections officer, often mistakenly perceived as an alpha cat, which doesn't exist in my book. A true bully is pretty much always going to be a Napoleon cat, overbearing about overowning his territory, puffing his ego out because underneath is a deeply unmojified being. On the other hand, the corrections officer is a mojito cat and a leader. He has a firm hand but rarely uses it. For example, by walking up to a favored sunning spot at 3:37 p.m. when someone else might be there, and placing a nose on the backside of the reclining cat, he is demonstrating a look at his pocket watch saying, "Time to move along." With this gesture, time-sharing is enforced and the multi-cat world continues well-oiled. The corrections officer leads with the least amount of effort necessary, and this judicious use of power is what separates him from a Napoleon cat. A multi-cat home with a corrections officer stands an infinitely better chance of being a home with happier endings. Recognize the signs. Besides an actual fight, there are a few clues that tell you there might be discord or bullying going on between cats in your home. Avoidance. This is a behavior seen in what I call the cabinet cats, the fridge cats, the closet cats, or the under-the-bed cats. These wallflowers are often not wallflowers by choice, but by circumstance, in response to being stalked. Constant stalking, even without the result of blood or hair being thrown around or various Tasmanian devil-looking results, is still psychological torture and will lead many times to physical illness, or at the very least, a pretty stressful existence. Using the tools here, learn the difference between a favorite hangout place and a cry for help. Pee or poop in a vertical place. When I'm doing my own cat detective work, a symptom that always provides me with an aha moment is pee or poop on the counter, on the stove, on a table, or even on top of the fridge. More often than not, this pattern is a result of bullying. In one scenario, the victim has been chased and cornered in that place and, in the heat of running away from the aggressor, had the pee or poop literally scared out of him. In another scenario, the victim didn't feel safe enough to leave that vertical nest. Getting to the litter box felt like a trip through the valley of the shadow of death. The only choice, whether because she was being proactive or because an aggressor was sitting on the floor waiting for her to move, was to pee or poop up in her only safe place. Competition for the most socially significant places in your house. In Chapter 5, I catalog the archetype of cats. If the concept of the Napoleon cat resonates with you, and you are seeing aggression in your house, you've probably seen evidence of bullying. The biggest telltale sign is a cat who, for no apparent reason, has abandoned hanging out in socially significant areas. These are the places that are just as important to the humans as they are to the cats, i.e. your bed and the couch, where your scent is just as strong as the cat's scents, as well as places that are ownership hotspots, places where there are resources like food, advantageous cat chest locations, or spots along the sundial. 2. New kid in town. When the new cat isn't getting along with the resident cat or cats. The problem. You recently adopted a new cat. You followed the introduction protocol in Chapter 10, and you are still having issues. Or perhaps you didn't follow the protocol, and now you're in a pickle. The reality. Some cats need a slower introduction than others to be integrated. That could mean weeks or even months. In the vast majority of cat adoptions, we know much less about our new family member's life before she came to us than we would like. What kind of abuse did she suffer? Did she have to compete for resources either on the street or in a home with too many other animals? Was she taken from mom and siblings too early, affecting her ability to communicate and coexist peacefully with others? And let's not forget that this individual is trying to find her way into a rhythm that was already established before she ever showed up. It's like territorial double dutch, and we shake our heads trying to figure out why they just can't work it out? Silly human. Key points. The key here is specificity. This is not one of those recipes where we add salt to taste. The steps must be followed as written and until the cats prove that they have earned the next step. Is your new adoptee one who just shouldn't be with other cats? Perhaps, but you want to be absolutely sure of that before considering a rehome, since that tag will be on the cat as he searches for a new family. Regardless of his final destination, the information gained about his personality and preferences is another reason why you must be mindful every step of this process. 3. Who are you? When cats who used to get along now fight. The problem. Your cats used to be the best of friends, or at least they tolerated each other. Now they're fighting around the clock. The reality. There's usually a good reason why cats who used to get along don't anymore. Two of the most common ones are non-recognition aggression and redirected aggression. Non-recognition aggression often breaks out when a cat comes home from the vet or a boarding situation, or after spending a day or two lost in the neighborhood, and smells distinctly different. Cats use scent to identify friend or foe. The confusion of seeing friend but smelling foe can easily lead to a raw cat false alarm of epic proportions. Redirected aggression typically happens when a sudden stimulus either surprises a cat into action or that sudden stimulus happens in the midst of a simmering, stressful situation. An example. Two of your cats are sitting side by side in a window, just watching the day go by. Suddenly, a community cat who is hidden from sight pops into view. At that moment, the raw cat comes screaming to the forefront. Fight or flight. Live or die. The house cat ceases to make decisions. His body, his finely honed raw cat instincts take over. He wants to get at the target, but the target is inaccessible, so that fight or flight energy gets taken out on whoever is nearby. In this case, it's your other cat. Key points. 1. If you feel like it could be a case of redirected aggression due to outside cats, see When Outside Cats Cause Trouble for Inside Cats, Chapter 18, while applying recipe number 2 from the beginning of this chapter. 2. No matter the root cause, the major problem is that if the relationship is damaged in that moment, it can be permanently damaged unless you take immediate action. In fact, one of the most difficult cases I've ever worked was exactly the above redirected scenario, and the participants were 7-year-old littermates. I'm sure you can relate. Imagine you're sitting at dinner with your significant other or a family member. The smoke alarm gets triggered by said dinner, and whomever you imagined in this scenario then attacks you, punching you in the face repeatedly. Let's face it, you are going to have some significant trust issues moving forward, because there's something inside you that has decided you just don't know who that person is anymore. All of this is to say, Don't underestimate the damage done to a relationship in moments. It goes a long way towards understanding that using this recipe involves threading a tricky needle, reintroducing and building positive associations as if they had never met. 4. I hate your face. When cats just refuse to coexist. The problem. No matter what you do, you can't get your cats to get along. The reality. Some cats will never accept an intruder into their territory, and some personalities will never mesh. I have worked with so many multiple cat homes where we did everything to make positive associations between the two animals. But no matter what, as soon as they had access to one another, they were at it, rolling around on the ground, Tasmanian devil style, fur flying, someone peeing on himself, sometimes headed for the hospital. In this case, it must be acknowledged that the cat can look at another cat and just say, "I hate your face." It's important for us to try to equate their experiences to our own to better understand the crossroads at which everyone stands. Think about that college roommate or the work associate you've had to share an office with. You just couldn't put your finger on it. The roommate paid the bills on time and cleaned up the kitchen. The work associate never left early, saddling you with his or her workload. But there was something about the way they laughed or ate their food. You just couldn't stand them. You hated their face and had to get away from them. The difference between us and our cats? We could make that choice to move out or change offices. Our cats can't. Key points. 1. Nobody likes talking about rehoming a cat. Me as little as anybody else. But I also want to make sure that we're keeping their needs on par with ours. When is that time to start thinking about rehoming? When there are constant fights and you have been trying to reintroduce the cats for months and months? Quite possibly. But first, 2. The site swap solution. If you are okay with that site swapping arrangement you've implemented during the bulk of any reintroduction process, and you can manage your own expectations to accept that it may never work out, and you understand that you may be living in a system of gates and doors, which many people have done successfully, well then, that's the way you can keep the cats together in the home. Otherwise, it's time to switch your frame of reference from guardian to foster parent and start finding what you consider to be the perfect home for one of these cats. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that we should jump to conclusions or rush to judgment. Options need to be exhausted before taking action or even getting into that ultimate conversation about rehoming a cat. There are some more ideas and tools below. In the course of my long history working with cats and their relationships, it's cases like these that I dread the most, where my ego can so easily take control. My desire and determination to make this square cat fit into the round hole. My ultimate job, remember, is to act as cat ambassador first and foremost. If one or both of the cats in a scenario like this says to me, "Jackson, I hate that guy's face," despite all of the negotiations and positive association building, that exclamation has got to be respected. Now, you might be reading this, shaking your head and saying that no matter what, you would never rehome a family member. Believe me, I get it. But that family member also needs a say. Nothing is working. A few more things to try. You've gone through the full introduction, or reintroduction process, and it's still looking like World War III between your feuding felines. Before you decide it's a match made in hell, consider the following. Reintroduction reflection. So you've gone through the introduction process at least once, right? Before drawing conclusions, take a critical eye to your own process, looking for signs of skipping or skimping. Did you follow the steps to the letter, or did you improvise here and there? Did you decide that a certain step didn't apply to your cat or your particular situation? Did you get frustrated at the glacial pace of success and gloss over the finer details? Sound familiar? If so, considering what's at stake with the outcome of this process, take another shot at thorough reintroduction. Make sure that you are setting concrete goals for each step and that you're not moving ahead until that goal is met. Also, be sure to take note of exactly where it all broke down last time, so you can give those phases of the process extra attention this time. Catification reflection. Another place in the process that tends towards skipping and skimping is catification. Catifying, if done in a thoughtful and complete way, will almost always bring down the territorial tension in the home, since what you are doing is creating more resources. Competition over those resources, as well as plain old square footage, will no doubt be dampened when there's more than enough of it to go around. Behavioral medication. This could be a book unto itself. As such, there are certain things I'd like you to consider. I don't recommend this step lightly, and when I do, it is first and foremost to alleviate suffering in the cat we are considering it for. I've also recommended it in certain cat-on-cat situations where both parties could benefit from a short-term course in order to get them to adjust their frame of reference and release either their aggressive or extremely fearful responses to normal stimuli. There is no black and white in this part of our world. I consider behavioral meds incredibly effective, but they are by no means magic. I also just as readily recommend natural solutions. I have, for years, made my own brand of flower essence remedies, or modalities like acupuncture or cranial sacral work. In conjunction with the techniques I've laid out, the meds can really help break through deep-seated problems and help forge a solution. One thing you will never see me do is recommend a lifetime of medication for a cat who doesn't personally need it in order to relieve suffering. If we have to rely on meds just so two cats can tolerate one another, then, in my opinion, we've gone too far. Also, you will obviously want to consult with your vet to see if one or both of your warring felines are candidates, and if they are physically okay enough to handle the medication. Please, though, do not let your vet, or me, or any one person make this decision for your cat and you. Do your due diligence on this matter. Research it fully. Ask why one medication was prescribed over another, etc. The truth is that advances are being made every day when it comes to medical assistance with animal behavior, and one professional may not have the same level of expertise as the next. The only way for you to feel good about a decision like this one? Be your own expert and your cat's advocate. Research the behavior and the medical options so that you can ask the right questions and make the right move. 15. When your cat is biting or scratching humans. Bloodletting in the course of your life together with a cat or cats happens. Most of the time it happens by accident. A scratch during play, toes that move under the blanket, a swipe at an insect that misses its target. Of course, there are times when cat-on-human aggression is not so innocent. But in either case, it's not your skin that pays the ultimate price. If the context of the aggression is not properly identified and approached, your relationship takes the biggest hit. Hurt feelings leave a bigger scar than a bite or scratch. Let's nip that one in the bud. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 3. Taking the Edge Off. The problem. You or a loved one have been feeling the wrath of claws, teeth, or both, and probably have the war wounds to show for it. You've even started to distance yourself from your cat as friends and family have started calling him names like the cat from hell. My bad, sorry. His actions could best be described as out of the blue, unpredictable, or random, and something must be done about this before your relationship, and the trust that goes with it, completely comes undone. The reality. As we've discussed, cats don't attack without a reason, even if that reason is apparent to nobody but them. Whether it's due to play aggression, redirected aggression, overstimulation, chemical or territorial fear, anxiety, or pain, we have to quickly assess the issue as we take a step-by-step run through this recipe. The steps. 1. Rule out the medical. If you feel that your cat's aggression could be stemming from a physical ailment, for example, when she suddenly bites or scratches when she's picked up a certain way, a vet exam should be part of your immediate future. Also, if the aggressiveness seems especially random or irrational, a judgment to be made after your detective work in item 4, there could be a chemical imbalance or other neurological issue that should be addressed with a medical professional as well. 2. Ascertain your cat's natural body rhythm, aka circadian rhythm. Detectivist homework number 1. Chronicle each attack, including what time they happen. If they're demonstrating aggression first thing in the morning when you wake up, or later in the day when you come home from work, these are considered high-energy times of the day. See more about detectivism in step 4. And the good news is, it tells you that your cat's body clock is synced up with yours. He's sleeping at night, and that's a natural body rhythm you can work with. If not, don't despair. You can get him there. This gets back to the three R's we've been talking about. See Chapter 7. 3. Play, in the world of a cat, is not a luxury, it's a necessity. If you have a dog and you don't have a leash and a collar, people are going to call you crazy. Because if you don't walk dogs every day, if you don't fulfill that innate need they have, then undesirable things will happen. That energy must go somewhere. Now replace the word dog with cat, and the words leash and collar with interactive toys. That's how strongly I feel about cats and play. The one thing that I can tell you is that if you commit not only to playing every day, that's a given, but investing in the play and draining hunter energy out of your cat during play, you're going to be thwarting a tremendous amount of bad behavior, not just play aggression. It goes far beyond that. But hey, nobody wants to bleed, and this is a great way of making that stop. Your work in step one informs your work here. If you ascertain a time pattern to the aggression, step that time back by 30 minutes and institute your HCKE ritual. 4. Cat detectivism. One of the reasons I have all my clients create a very detailed journal is to remove yourself from the storyline and just write about actions, timing, and patterns that you start to notice in your cat's behavior. Once you look at the information you've gathered, it's a good bet that if your cat is engaging in play aggression, he's probably doing it around the same time every day. So if that's the case, then you have the capability to be proactive. It means that if you take a look at your journal and say, I get up for work at 6 a.m. and I'm out the door by 8 a.m., in between those times is when my ankles get attacked, then, well, I know you're not going to want to hear this because you've got lots of things to do in the morning, but that means that playing with your cat for at least a couple of minutes is really important in the morning. The key is not to wait for the behavior. Be proactive. 5. It's not just about the when, it's about the where. Use your mojo map. Aggression that happens by windows indicates that you might have outdoor cats triggering aggressive behavior in your indoor cats, and that could be causing a form of redirected aggression. See Barbarians at the Gate in Chapter 18 for some solutions. If your cat tends to do that ankle attack from under a table, that tells you you've got a bush dweller. That's where he gains his hunting mojo. If that's the case, then play with him under the table. Use your feather toy and start bringing it to that floor level. Commit to ground prey instead of just flying the bird in the air. Hunting-wise, he'd probably be more inclined, at least when it comes to starting that hunter motor, to start on the ground. 6. Your part in the pain. There are those times when we are just asking for it. Here are a few of those times. Roughhousing. When it comes to roughhousing, it is a big mistake to assume that cats enjoy play in the same way dogs do. Remember, cats are prey players, and fun for them is hunting, catching, killing, and eating. Not the kind of rough interaction that dogs might enjoy more. Yes, cats respond to the stimulus of roughhousing, but not in the way you might expect, especially if you're used to playing roughly with dogs. With cats, it will likely trigger defensiveness or fear, or at the very least, dangerous play like the on-their-back, all-four-paw wraparound, and you definitely won't like the way that feels. Overstimulation. This is a form of aggression that is typically induced by either petting a certain way and/or for a certain duration of time. This is another one that's on you, if it happens. See Chapter 11 for more info. Putting your hands in the blender. It is ill-advised to use your hands to break up a fight or try to comfort, pick up, or move a cat who is clearly upset. Instead, try to guide them to a quiet location for a timeout. For more on timeouts, see Chapter 9. Keep those nails trimmed. A little trimming can go a long way, should you happen to encounter the scissor hands in passing or otherwise. Hands are not toys. If you already have a cat who has learned that hands are toys, he's probably also become very sensitive to hands approaching him. There are ways to change that reaction. 1. Teach your cat that hands are only used gently by being aware about when you bring your hands to your cat. If you approach your cat with your hands during a time when she is already in a hyped-up state, then you're asking for it. Only approach your cat for petting when there's a sleepy, late-night vibe, as opposed to when she is ramped up and ready to play. 2. If your cat is now hand-shy, meaning that every time your hands come to her, she shrinks away, then you'll want to approach slowly, build positive associations by holding treats, and come at her from a low angle as opposed to above her head. When we humans are afraid of cats, we try to pet them by taking our hands and gingerly going over the top of their head. This is an invitation for disaster with a fight-or-flight animal, because it could be perceived as a threat. Again, try to approach your cat with your hands from a low position, and, if possible, use the Michelangelo technique. See Chapter 11. When you're trying to recondition this behavior, everyone in your home must buy in. If everyone is adhering to the exercises and rules we've laid out here, except for one person, who is still roughhousing and using hand play, it will undo everyone else's hard work. Just as with any exercise we present in this book, consistency and group buy-in from the humans are key. The mojo moment. More than anything, the mojo moment includes randomness being replaced by predictability. Understanding your cat is the first step towards helping him. Helping him means that your relationship is back on track. You can now predict his rhythms and head off any aggressive behavior at the pass. And if the problem was physical in nature, your cat is definitely feeling better, and that's a huge bonus. Notes from the chef. Stay calm and carry on. If and when your cat might exhibit some aggression, don't have a big reaction, such as screaming, yelling, or pushing your cat. This will escalate things. This can also explain why cats may prey more on certain people in the home. They tend to pick on those who are fearful and have a huge reaction to their bites and scratches. Avoid being a threat. Cats will bite when cornered or threatened. This may be circumstantial, or it may be because you have a wallflower. A house of plenty. Keep a Napoleon at bay by making sure your home has plenty of vertical space, scent soakers, and signposts. Stranger danger. Help your cat have good associations with visitors. See Getting Comfortable with Visitors in Chapter 19. Forget punishment. This will not work. As discussed, your cat will not understand what you're doing, and it will ultimately only serve to undermine your relationship. 16. When your cat exhibits annoying, attention-seeking behaviors. Hands down, if I have a job, it's due to three things. Litter box issues, aggression, are the huge pile of aggravation contained in this chapter. However, these issues are the ones that routinely drive guardians to the brink faster than the other two. I guess irritating rings that bell faster than despairing. I know clients who have swept peeing problems under the rug, sometimes literally, for years. Waking you up in the middle of the night? That's what gives you the impetus to track me down in the cereal aisle of the supermarket. And for those who have, yes, I still like Cap'n Crunch. Don't judge. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 4. The Annoyulator. The problem. From clawing up the curtains to climbing the walls, swinging from the chandeliers, both metaphorically and literally, scratching artwork, knocking things over, and being what some might call a pain in the ass, or what the internet has dubbed asshole cat, your cat is driving you crazy with his annoying behavior. And worse yet, he seems to be fully aware that it's driving you crazy. The reality. If my last point hits home, let's start by stepping away from the crazy. In many cases, unwanted nuisance behavior is something we bring on ourselves, because there's something in it for the cat. If your cat meows incessantly, wakes you up in the middle of the night, sits in front of your computer monitor or in your lap while you read the newspaper, or scratches or bites you as a way of trying your patience, there's always a payoff. When you're annoyed by a behavior, you give it weight by showing your dissatisfaction in some way, usually by yelling, or by appeasing your cat by rewarding the behavior. Either way, to your cat, all attention is reward. I'm going to give you suggestions that will address the big picture, which is why your cat is being annoying in the first place. Then I'll talk about the most common nuisance behaviors and some specific remedies to restore your relationship with your asshole cat. The steps. 1. Battle boredom. This means we step up our play routine, making sure that it is routine, a ritual, and part of your daily rhythm. Your cats need their energy drained in a constructive way each day. Remember our mantra, play equals prey. Engage your cats in play during high energy times of the day. 2. Back to the 3 R's. If you think about it, your cats will be knocking things off the shelves during predictable times of the day. They'll be counter-surfing at predictable times of the day. Usually, it's when you're there and the energy in the whole home has risen, when everybody's getting up in the morning, when everybody has come home from work, or when everyone's getting ready to go to bed at night. So make sure that you're being proactive about when you play as much as you're stepping up the amount of time that you play with your cat. 3. Catification. Your cat might knock over things on the mantle when she's just trying to get to her window perch. He might be on the counter surfing to get to a window. Try to think about where the layout of the home is leading your cat. Your cat sees every ounce of territory as a potential piece of superhighway and a potential destination. If you don't want her going from point A to point B, it's up to you to catify and to lead her from point A to point C instead. Create a satisfying superhighway for your cat that avoids delicate areas, whether they be counters, mantles, or any place where your cat could break something or hurt himself. 4. Cat-proofing. If there are things you don't want your cat to knock over or play with, consider the concept of cat-proofing. It's a lot like child-proofing. Let's face it, you live in a cat's home now. If that piece of fine china sitting on your mantle is important for you to have out, then do what we do with everything in California. Earthquake-proof it. Museum putty is a great start. Securing your belongings to the place where they live is always a good idea, because it doesn't necessarily have to be your cat poking at it until it falls, just to see what happens. Tie up those curtains and bundle computer cords. Take the potential toy out of all those household objects. 5. The no/yes. If you're going to say no to your cat, there's got to be a yes nearby. Go back to Chapter 9 and review the no/yes technique and consider how it might apply to what your cat is doing. 6. Rewarding the silence, or the good behavior. Remember the child who was crying for ice cream back in Chapter 9? Make sure that you are giving your cat praise or treats when he's being quiet and calm and behaving in a way that makes you think, "More of this, please." Cat Daddy Recipe Number 5. The Counter Surfer. The problem. Your cat is getting his dirty paws all over your kitchen counter. Maybe he's stealing food or just getting in your way when you're trying to cook. Regardless, it's annoying at best and unsanitary at worst. The reality. Your cat might love to be up high, or he might be really food motivated and is hoping to snatch a snack while he is counter surfing. Perhaps you've been gone all day and he's just really happy to have some quality time with you. The steps. 1. The no. Say no to your cat by taking double-sided tape, affixing it to a plastic placemat, and putting the placemat up on the counter. Every time your cat jumps up on the counter, she is inevitably going to get sticky, and she'll stop jumping to that area. In Chapter 9, I also suggested using a motion-sensitive compressed air canister, which can be very effective. It's nothing that's going to hurt the cats, but it's something that will show them that this is not the kind of place they want to hang out. Remember, consistency is the key when you're doing any kind of training, and consistency in this kind of work is basically impossible to do yourself since you can't be there to dissuade your cat 24/7. This is part of the reason why just yelling at your cat to get off is useless. All she learns is to come back when you're not around. 2. The yes. Now that you've found ways to say no to your cat, how do you say yes? One of the best ways is providing him a perch that is a yes. Put a cat tree in the dining room, in an area by the kitchen, so that your cat can be up high and part of the action, and you can actually reward him for being in that spot. Train your cat to jump up onto the cat tree, and once he gets there, give him a treat. Then he'll come down again. Then lead him back up with a treat. Every time he gets to that perch, he gets that treat. The payoff from the perch becomes bigger than from the counter. That is, of course, if you don't leave food out on the counter. What cat is going to say no to a free buffet? Notes from the chef. Meal matching. Set up your ritual of feeding your cats to match the humans' food times and in the same proximity, and now you've got a proper no/yes going on. Keep it clean. For sanitary purposes, you might not want your cat in the same place where you're prepping food for humans. While you're training, keep sanitizing wipes handy. Stoves and safety. The other thing is the danger of stoves and cats. If your cats are determined to walk across the stove to get to their favorite perch, you'd want to make that area a no with the tools that I've just discussed. But just to be safe, child-proof the stove and cabinets. There should be childproofing covers on the burners and knobs and baby latches to keep your cat out of the cabinets. Finally, don't set them up for failure. If the only predictable route to a desired area is across that counter, it's on you. Create a new pathway if you want the behavior to stop. The mojo moment. Our mojo moment happens somewhere in the intersection of when we stop being annoyed at our cat for bothering us and when our cat stops being annoyed at life for not giving her more to do. As with all of our annoying recipes, a true win-win is compromise. And that gives us the mojo moment. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 6. Pillow Trotting. Why your cat keeps you up all night. The problem. Your cat is waking you up at some obscene hour while you are trying to sleep. She might be walking on your face, running across your bed, meowing for food, scratching at your door. The list goes on. Sleep deprivation is taking its toll, which is why most people will do anything to try to keep their cat quiet at night. You may have tried confining your cat in the bathroom, yelling at him, throwing pillows, using a squirt bottle, feeding, cuddling him, locking him out of your bedroom, and then he probably scratched and meowed at your door for another hour. Yet the very next night, your cat is meowing at 3 a.m. again. I've even had clients who slept in their car to get a good night's sleep. The reality. If you are asking, how can I sleep through the night without strangling my cat, you need to be aware that the idea that cats are nocturnal animals is a fallacy. People just think this is the price you pay for having a cat. But your cat being up all night is a symptom of your failure to provide routine, ritual, and rhythm. Cats actually aren't nocturnal. They live on a corpuscular rhythm and naturally want to get up at dusk and dawn when their prey is most active. But we can reset their body clocks. If you want to know how you can sleep through the night, this ritual is it. It's all about getting your cat on the rhythm of your household. The steps. 1. First, stop free feeding. See feeding for mojo. Feed in conjunction with play. If you go to bed at 11, feed your last meal at around 9:30. Right before that last meal, engage in HCK. Bring your cat to a boil. See boil and simmer. Get him pooped out, then go for that second wind. Now it will take less time for him to get completely worn out. Then he eats, grooms, and sleeps, and then you go to sleep. 2. Match their energy with yours. Keep them active when the family is active. Again, it's all about the three R's. 3. The hard part. It's 3 a.m. and your cat is waking you up. Your cat should be down for the count, but she is not. This is tough, but you have to ignore her completely. You definitely don't get up, feed, play, get up and go to the bathroom, etc. But completely means don't say her name, don't chuck a pillow, play dead. Yes, it will absolutely suck, but any attention whatsoever, negative or positive, is the payoff for her. If you tell her through your inaction night after night that nothing will happen after that behavior, she will stop. It might be tough for 10 days to 2 weeks, but then you'll be good. See the extinction burst for more on why these 2 weeks will be rough. Can you lock them out of the bedroom? Look, the bedroom is the most scent-heavy room in your house. It's a socially critical area, so I recommend that your cats be allowed in. I'm generally not okay with rooms being off-limits, especially if your cats are used to sleeping with you. Locking them out of the room sets up another battle zone, your bedroom door. Instead, remember the no/yes. Why not place cat beds on nightstands or nearby furniture with a heated pad to encourage their use? You can gradually move those heated beds to other rooms if you want, but you've created a desirable destination, which should help diminish her insistence. Cat Daddy Tip: Meowing for food. If your cat is really persistent about meowing at you for food, you can use an automatic timed feeder. By having a meal simply appear at exact timed intervals, the environment becomes the provider, and the human is taken right out of the feeding equation. Of course, this isn't my optimal choice. There are many advantages to the giving of food being part of your relationship. What desperate times call for desperate measures? The mojo moment. The mojo moment might be when your alarm clock wakes you up and you realize you made it all the way to the alarm without hearing a single meow. You get out of bed and your cat says, "You know what? I'm good. I'm gonna snooze another 15 minutes. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 7. The Door Dasher. The problem. You open the door. Your hands are full of bags of groceries. Your cat zooms out. You've got a DoorDasher. The reality. Many DoorDashers get outside and then they just stand there like, okay, now what? They don't usually race down the street. But for some cats, DoorDashing can be downright dangerous. Especially if your cat is indoors only, DoorDashing is a fast track to getting themselves lost. The steps. 1. The no/yes. If there's a low, bush-dwelling place, like a coffee table, by the front door, that's going to be a prime DoorDashing place. The no. Block off some of those routes that lead your cat from an under to the outside. The yes. Create destinations that are in the opposite direction of the door. Place cat trees in safer places. Guide them to other bush-dwelling places in the main living space away from the door. Give them cocoons where they can be their bush-dwelling selves so they stop thinking about going outside. 2. Go vertical. Because most DoorDashers are also bush-dwellers, try bringing them up into the vertical world. Most DoorDashers will not jump from a high place to get out the door. They usually need to be on the floor first. If you give them an observation post 4 or 5 feet off the floor that is also near the door, they'll usually sit there watching the traffic go in and out the door because the activity is what fascinates them. 3. Interactive playtime. Train them to go to those new destinations by using interactive playtime and keeping those destinations in mind. Think of it as you would train with a toy for an agility course, leading them to those vertical spaces or cocoons. Put treats in those locations to end the play. 4. Bring the outside in. Think about what it is they want outside. Perhaps you can meet this need by having a planter in the house with cut grass or catnip in it. Give them an alternative that fulfills that desire for them to get outside and roll around in some dirt. 5. The ultimate solution. A catio with perches and grass for them to chew on and roll around in is the ultimate no/yes to the DoorDashing question. A catio solves all your problems. 6. Harness training. Finally, if your cat is one of those guys who just needs to go outside, you can do that safely by training him to a harness. See Chapter 12. The mojo moment. When you get home from work, your cat greets you, not the opportunity for escape. Whether they're at face level on their tree that you've placed near the front door or in their cocoon on the other side of the house, you feel assured that they aren't making a run for it any time that door is opened. A note from the chef. Pick your battles. I was just in a house yesterday where I asked the guardian, "What can I do for you?" She said, "Well, I don't want my cat walking on the counter, on the dining room table, on my desk, or on my head while I'm sleeping at night." I had to ask, "Well, what do you want your cat to do? And have you considered a goldfish instead of a cat?" You have to choose your battles. Now, absolutely, if we're talking about cats not being on the counter, especially where food prep is done, that's a good battle to pick. But the other ones? You may want to think long and hard about saying no to your cat too many times. Many of these behaviors, like being an asshole cat, are clear examples of boredom. I'm giving you activities to keep your cat from being bored, and you need to take that bull by the horns. Again, I can't overstate it. Pick your battles. And when you do pick your battles, remember, cat TV, catification, HCKE, the no/yes, and clicker training. All of these things can make sure that your cat's not an asshole and that you're not overreacting. 17. When your cat exhibits anxiety-related behaviors. In the name of transparency, each and every time I come up against certain behaviors, even if I can tell the guardian what they are looking at, I panic a little bit because there will inevitably come a moment when they look to me for an answer and they don't get one. The conditions described in this chapter are rife with question marks about their origins, their symptoms, and their cures, if there are any. What all of these behaviors have in common are that A, they have or appear to have anxiety as a primary symptom, and B, they send guardians past frustration into concern and often into panic. Sometimes, having a name for a condition gets you somewhere, but not all the way to the finish line. Hopefully, my experience with and empathy for my clients provides relief and a way forward. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 8, the Separation Anxiety Reliever. The problem. You've got a suspicion that your cat really doesn't like it when you're gone. Perhaps you're coming home to destruction or poop on your bed, or to find that your cat has licked himself bald in your absence. Maybe your neighbor has complained that your cat meows nonstop as soon as you leave for work. Bottom line? Even if you run to the store and come back, chaos happens. The reality. The textbook manifestation of separation anxiety in an animal is signs of distress only in the absence of their humans. You will find endless resources online about separation anxiety in dogs, but as far as cats are concerned, there's still a scarcity of information. Part of the reason is because of the misconception, still even in the medical community, that cats are socially aloof. Since they don't really have a connection to humans in the first place, how could they have separation anxiety? Adding to the challenge is the fact that cats are rarely destructive in the way that dogs are. You usually won't come home to chewed up windowsills or broken doors, meaning a cat's cries for help are often left unanswered. That said, some signs of separation anxiety are similar for cats and dogs. Vocalization, pre-departure distress, over-grooming, and continually following their human from room to room. In cats, you often see behaviors like marking items that are heavily scented, like you. Although there are genetic predispositions towards this condition, Siamese and other considered Oriental breeds are more prone, it is possible that early weaning or other experiences may influence how over-attached a cat might be. The thing that universally connects the separation anxiety experience, whether you're talking about a cat or a dog, is a lack of confidence. The steps. 1. Journaling. Documenting your cat's behavior and your interactions with your cat is a great place to start. For separation anxiety in particular, it will be important to note how long you are gone before she starts to exhibit symptoms. Also, remote viewing cams are another great opportunity to gather info and potential symptoms in regard to what your cat is doing when you're not home, since many separation-related behaviors happen only in your absence. 2. HCKE. Make sure to have an HCKE session every morning. I know making time for this can be a challenge, but even a short session will help dramatically. The advantages are twofold. A. We know the mojo-inspiring benefits of play for a cat lacking confidence is a gimme in this case. And B, the feeding part that happens right before you leave makes it so she's occupied while you exit stage left. That said, don't forget the next step. 3. Change it up. Avoid predictable cues that you are leaving. Instead, switch up your routine. Right now, your cat knows that you putting on your coat equals leaving. The jingle of your keys equals leaving. You putting on the radio every day before you leave equals leaving. So, pick your keys up when you wake up, then stick around, or go outside for a moment, then come back inside. 4. No big deal. The hardest thing for my clients to do is take my advice and just walk out of the house. Don't even say goodbye, just leave. Go back to the section on your challenge line. The habit of soothing your cats before you leave the house feeds into their anxiety. They don't catch the English. They catch the tone of guilt and dread, and now they are expecting the sky to fall. Now you have inadvertently incurred separation anxiety because of your fear that they will have separation anxiety. 5. Cat TV. Enrich their world while you're gone. Move a cat tree next to a window so your cat can look out, or add a bird feeder and all the trimmings right outside the window to keep your cat engaged during the day. Heated beds can be helpful for some clingy cats. Last, don't forget to pay attention to the sundial. 6. Other alternatives. If you can afford it or have a friend who can help, you might want a cat sitter to check in on your cat at the midway point of your absence, perhaps a lunchtime check-in while you are at work. There are also numerous pharmaceutical approaches that have proven to be effective to help treat separation anxiety, and if your cat's symptoms are persistent and severe, it is an option well worth considering. The mojo moment. In this case, you come home from an especially long workday, and your cat is sleeping in the last remaining sliver of sun on her window perch. She sleepily notices your arrival and gives you a, "Hey, how you doing?" nod. As you check mail and head into the kitchen, she stretches and yawns, jumps down, and walks over to get a pet or two and wait for dinner to be served. You feel like you were missed, but you don't feel guilty about your absence, and all, in this moment, is mojo. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 9. Getting chewed out. The problem. Your cat is eating basically anything that's not nailed down. He's chewing on corners of books, pencils, plastic, paper towels, chair corners and cabinets, and turning your favorite sweaters and blankets into Swiss cheese. You're beginning to think that just because he might be bored or might want attention, or might just be hell-bent on annoying